non-traditional doesn't even begin to describe Pastor Rudy Rasmus' story. A former brothel owner, he spent the past 21 years growing St. John's United Methodist Church in Houston, Texas, from 9 to 9,000 members and touching many, many more thousands along the way. The congregation is notable for both its incredible diversity and its broad outreach to those in need, and I am so very pleased to have Pastor Rudy join me now on State of Belief Radio. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing, Reverend Gaddy?
Would you please explain a little bit about the history of the church, your background, how you got into the church and came to be doing what you're doing?
My daddy taught me to never trust preachers and church people. He said they were all full of something, and I believed him, which means it took me a long time to actually get to the church. Uh-huh. But I met a girl that I fell in love with who was a church girl, and when we married, I followed her to church, and I sat on the pew, Reverend Gaddy, for 5 years, really looking for what normally people with my background normally look for with church people, and that is fraud and hustle, you know? But I sat on that pew week after week, year after year, and for 5 years, I discovered that those people who told me they loved me actually meant it, and ultimately I became a Christian, took a step almost immediately out of my family business, which was that, we actually call it a borderline brothel versus versus full-fledged. Because, you know, that's really illegal, you know what I mean?
Oh, but, I see. Okay. Okay.
But borderline, really, from the standpoint, this business was really, it was a sexually oriented business designed for the prostitution trade.
I see.
And I was in that business my entire adult life.
Good grief.
Yeah. And, you know, when I came to church and ultimately becoming a Christian, almost immediately I felt a real compelling urge to do something good. Now, that's a big word, good.
Sure,
but I felt the urge to do something good. And ultimately, the ministers and pastors on the church campus where I became part of the faith actually, you know, gave me some direction in terms of ministry. I didn't know really what ministry meant, but one particular pastor told me one day it meant to serve, and that was it.
Right. Yeah. Well, what do you attribute the astounding growth of your membership to? I mean, we're talking about going from 9 to 9,000 members.
You know, we have really discovered the power of unconditional love. That is, love without conditions. Mm-hmm. And often, you know, it's just kind of crazy. But instinctively, as human beings, we place conditions on the person in front of us as to whether or not we're going to accept that person for who they are and where they are. Well, at this church in Houston, Texas, St. John's, we have, from the first day, approached every human being that has walked through the door with what I call the unconditional love of God. And the transformative power of this love in a person's life, regardless to where they are. I mean, now, imagine this. This congregation comes from 150 zip codes. That means every neighborhood in Houston is represented on the pew. Isn't that crazy?
It is, yeah.
Every neighborhood. Amazing. But the one common denominator for every person, be it black, white, straight, gay, rich, poor, educated, uneducated, homeless, or seven bedrooms, is the need for love and the pain that we all drag through life. And that common denominator comes to that place, and ultimately we find ourselves not only in community, but as family.
Rudy, how do you translate unconditional love into palpable ways of outreach so that people who don't know what you're talking about when you say unconditional love, how do they learn it?
We have really had to instruct over the years because it's not something instinctive for the average human being. This unconditional love really is the practice and the process of accepting the person in front of you and understanding that person's need for the same compassion that you need.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an exercise, and we teach this exercise in our faith community, and we call it the compassion exercise.
Mm.
But imagine this. You are face-to-face with a person who is the other. That means the person that you probably would never share a cup of coffee with in any point in your life. You're standing face-to-face with the other. And the exercise is to look at that person and say to yourself, just like me, that person needs love. That person needs compassion. That person needs to be understood. That is the hardest thing for a person to do, but once you do it, it becomes the easiest thing to do.
Sure. What are the forms of outreach, the substance of the ministries, the kinds of service that come out of your church as an expression of that?
The primary outreach that we've been involved in for the 22 years that we've been in that place has been to the homeless community in and around downtown Houston.
Hmm.
When we got to this building, Reverend Gaddy, in 1992, there were homeless folks sleeping literally on the doorsteps. And when we got to that doorstep, we had a choice.
Hmm.
We could step over that person and close the door behind us, or we could awaken that person and bring them in with us.
Hmm.
We just decided to bring the folk in with us. And from that moment, it was clear that our primary mission was going to be to marginalized people. Now, what we've discovered over these 20 years is that marginalization extends beyond homelessness.
Sure.
And we've extended the circle to every marginalized people group over these 20 years that would ultimately find themselves not welcomed at church.
Hmm.
You know, so we welcome. You know, we say, okay, so you don't feel comfortable at church, come hang out with us. And that is an amazing, amazing outreach
yeah.
to a city where, you know, people, for the most part, all over the country, for the most part, don't really feel comfortable
mm-hmm.
in church often, unless they were church folks at some point along the way and have what we also call situational esteem. So, you know, you have to have a certain esteem, self-esteem,
mm-hmm.
to walk into some rooms. And you have to have a lot of self-esteem to walk into most church rooms.
What part of what you do you find most rewarding?
I'll give you an example. A dear friend of mine just lost a child.
Mm-hmm.
And in that process of losing that child, this close friend of mine contemplated the relevance of God.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did from the moment of that child's illness through that child's funeral, I showed consistent love and compassion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What my friend told me a couple of days ago, right after the child's funeral, he said, Rudy, you helped me stay in this thing
mm-hmm.
called faith.
Yeah.
By the tangible evidence of your love. So the reward for me was a person experiencing the love of God through my actions.
Yeah. I want to go all the way back now to one of the first things that you told me, and that is you said that in your former life you didn't trust ministers, you didn't trust churches. What is it now that you're in a church, now that you are a minister, and you have those memories of how you felt, what are you conscientiously doing that you wish someone had done to you early in life?
You know, at St. John's, we call it pimp-proofing. We pimp-proof our congregation to help them to be resilient when it comes to the unfortunate experiences in many churches.
Mm-hmm.
What happened early on is that my dad always equated preachers to pimps.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've done at St. John's in an effort to counteract that presence or even that belief is, one, we've been extremely consistent as expressions of ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, we have not necessarily lived the shiniest, blingiest life.
Mm-hmm.
I drive a 13-year-old pickup truck, and I'm pretty comfortable in that truck, and people expect me to drive something different.
Mm-hmm.
I've never worn a suit in this building for worship services over the last 20 years, and there's an expectation that I am supposed to be, you know, shinier than anybody
mm-hmm.
on the pew.
Mm-hmm.
In the process, I have demonstrated what I mentioned earlier, and that is the presence of unconditional acceptance
yeah.
for every person who's walked through the door.
Mm.
And that demonstration really has been more powerful than my 13-year-old truck, my blue jeans, and my lack of shininess.
Yeah.
It's the acceptance that has made
sure.
the biggest difference in people moving through their isms and the big chasm that exists between people in the church at this particular place.
How is St. John's celebrating Christmas?
Well, first of all, we remind people that Christmas is not our birthday,
mm-hmm.
and that there is something larger happening in this moment we call the Advent season.
Yes.
Where we had celebrated the anticipation of the birth of Jesus. And in that place, we help people to do four things. One, to worship fully, and that is to give themselves to something, to an idea larger than anything they can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, we encourage people to spend less. And at the same time, we encourage people to give more. You know, spend less mm-hmm. on the items that you know you won't value or even remember 1 month after Christmas,
mm-hmm.
and to give to someone and something that is beyond ourselves that could help humanity. Number four, we ask people to love all. And in that process, the world changes one relationship at a time to the point where we can ultimately experience peace on this planet, and that's the real goal.
Pastor Rudy Rasmus is co-pastor of St. John's United Methodist Church in Houston, Texas, and I'm so pleased that on this particular show we could have you, Pastor Rudy, in our presence and sharing your story with us. I thank you for being with us on State of Belief Radio, and wish blessings on you and your church.
Thank you, Reverend Gaddy.